Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I'm just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening, and for those of us who are celebrating Passover already, happy Pesach. Kirk and JB, are you guys going to begin tonight or tomorrow night?
I will be doing it tomorrow night.
Okay. I can support that. What about you, Kirk?
We were going to, but we also have some friends over here that are going to start tomorrow night, so we wanted to join in, so it'll be a big family gathering, and so we'll be sharing Pesach with them tomorrow night.
Okay, so you were thinking about tonight, and then you decided tomorrow night because you have Covenant family members in.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I was in the same boat in the sense that took the opposite course, but I think that's the joy of this whole thing and the freedom we have in the whole thing. My youngest son is a Covenant member, and he is currently going to law school, and he called a few days ago and said, you know, I'd really like to celebrate Pesach together. It's a little easier for me to do it on Friday evening. You can pick me up Friday and bring me back on Saturday morning than it is on Saturday. Is there any way we can justify Pesach on Friday versus on Saturday? And, you know, I looked at it again, and, well, it looked to me like it was even, Steven. You could do a coin flip on this one.
Yeah.
And you could come up with either day. And, you know, I told myself, you know, I think that since it's so close, and the fact that we can do it together, if I pick you up on Friday and we celebrate it Friday evening, that's going to work out. That's going to be our best choice because it is about family.
Yeah.
So
yep.
We barbecued our lamb tonight and had our matzah and our red wine and our olive oil with bitter herbs and just had a grand time.
Great.
My little granddaughter was here, and my son and daughter-in-law was here, both sons. So, you know, what a delightful thing. And you know, when I asked you guys what you're doing, and you're both doing it tomorrow night, I know there are lots of people that over time have been really angry with me for suggesting that the timing of this was less important than the meaning of it. And, you know, they say, you know, God has his own timing, and who are you to change his time? Not changing his time. You know, he did not give us specific instructions as to how to discern the timing. I mean, it's pretty close. You know, he tells us that that barley will be Abib, which means it's green and growing. That's really symbolic, though. That the flax will begin to flower, which is an early spring flower, and that it's the renewing of the light on the moon closest to those things, and that it's the 14th day of the month, and the 14th day of the month begins at sundown on the 13th day. You know, that's going to get you really close almost all the time. But he did not say how much has to be seen. if it's observational or astronomical, and the difference being, you know, you can probably see 1 to 2% maybe of renewing light on the moon, because anything less than that, you're looking into the sunset.
Yeah.
You know, when you're trying to determine, you know, Pesach is a full moon, but
the beginning of the month is a new moon.
It is a renewing light on the moon, and I don't think you can see really more than 1 to 2%
because
you are looking into right. You're looking into the sunset. It always occurs very late in the afternoon, low on the horizon, where you have the most atmosphere to look through, the most potential for clouds and everything else. So God doesn't say, you know, when you can't see it, you know, use your best guess. And he doesn't say, I want you to use the astronomical, which means that even 1/100 of 1% renewing light prior to the sunset. I think it has to be prior to the sunset because, you know, the NASA models
mm-hmm.
present it prior to midnight. You know, it's they tell you when the moon is going to set, but they give you the percentage at the end of the day, which would be midnight. Well, you can't see it at midnight, of course. You only can see it as the sun is setting.
Yeah.
So, I think that the reason that Yahweh did not give us a means to precisely determine which day.
Well, and what do you do if it happens to be a very stormy period of weather? You can't see it, period. You might go 3-4 weeks without seeing it.
You know, we just came through in Southwest Ohio. We just came through, as did much of the middle of the country, 4 days where we were considering building the ark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just rained and rained and rained. And the sun finally broke out this afternoon. It's the first time we've seen the sun in a week. So would it have been possible, you know, and I want to tell you, 2 weeks ago, it was the same thing. So, no, you couldn't see it.
Yeah.
So, you know, the best you can do is you can choose. And what I do is, you know, our good friend Yoel put together that beautiful presentation that's the end of the Kara Invitations, the last chapter of the Invitations volume, the third volume of Yada Yah. And you can look at it and you can say, all right, this is the day that is that you have observational, this day that is astronomical. You can see exactly how much of the moon's light is going to be growing on the surface of the moon. Each day, as we look at the potentials for new moons, and in fact, there are some times where the new moon is pretty equidistant to the vernal equinox. And so, you know, what I applaud Yoel for doing is that he said, you know, it's not my job to determine which of these new moons are renewing, it's not new moon, but renewing first sliver of light, starts the first of the year. It's my job to present the information and then you to think about it. Because
mm-hmm.
there's a
every
lot
year
to
I get
think
two
about.
Or three emails at least of people asking me how I, you know, when I'm going to be celebrating. I don't usually don't give much of an answer beyond going, I look here. These are the resources I'm using. You know, this is your best. This chapter is your best source of information for that.
Right.
It's
I think that chapter actually does a nice job of walking people through the thought process without saying,
mm-hmm.
we're not going to tell you what day. We're going to tell you the thought process to use, and you should use it because there's a lot that goes into it that I don't think God wants us to miss. For example, why is it associated with barley, and why is the first month called Abib? Those are really significant concepts.
Yeah.
You know, barley. Yahweh uses agricultural metaphors, and his favorite happens to be the metaphors of the three things that become symbols of saved souls in the process of culling, grinding out, purifying that which is usable from that which is dross and thrown away. One of those things happens to be barley as a grain. But barley is used to make bread. And bread can be leavened, which means it has yeast in it, and barley can be unleavened, which is matzah. But but is used to make bread. So barley, it's a perfect kind of an example because with all of those kinds of grains, there is the usable and nutritious kernel, but there's also a lot of chaff. And so the chaff is the vast preponderance of a grain crop is chaff. And it's dried up and blown away. It ceases to exist, which is the vast preponderance of people. You know, it's probably 1/1,000th or 1/10,000th or 1/100,000th. If you look at the whole plant from its roots to the stalk to the grassy part of it to the kernel with the chaff, the covering, and the usable part of the kernel. And the whole thing, it might be 1/100,000th is that little kernel.
Yes,
so it's a wonderful metaphor. And he uses, of course, grapes and olives as the metaphors that everybody throughout time can understand. And then Abib speaks of green and growing. Now, if you're not receptive and green and growing and the like, you're not going to get this message. If you've been surrounded by religion your whole life and you are not flexible to the possibility that your religion is wrong, then if you're hard, dried up, it isn't going to matter. Nothing Yahweh says is going to resonate. So that's why it is a bee, green and growing, receptive barley, the usable grain, speaking of saved souls. And so you need to understand what a bee represents. And then Yahweh is about light, not darkness. So he is not going to establish a day for something important. For example, something like his means for eternal life, for perfection, which requires light, and being adopted in his family where we become light on anything other than the maximum light, which is a full moon.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the reason why Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, and also why Sukkah occurred during a full moon, the 14th or 15th or 16th day of the new month where the light on the moon is beginning to renew. And Kodesh, which speaks of the renewing light on the moon, that's also an important concept, and you ought not miss it in your study of this, of what Pesach represents, what Matzah represents, what Bikurim represents, because it speaks of renewal. Renewal of light. What happens when we become part of Yahweh's covenant family? We are renewed. We are restored. And so it's about growing light, not waning light. Waxing, not waning. Extremely important. So if you're just told the date, none of that's going to resonate with you.
Yeah.
And I think, fellas, that the moment you begin to think, to believe, that all I have to do is to do this. You know, this is the instruction manual. I observe Passover, Matzah, and Bikurim, and I do what is asked. That's going to make me right with Yahweh. No, it's not. That's not. What's going to make you right with Yahweh is coming to understand what he is offering and asking, accepting and responding to it. You can't accept, understand, or respond if you're simply acting out a set of rules.
Yeah. So someone in the chat room just now, that's something we've been doing a lot around here, you know, as Dylan's gotten older, is we've started doing the action stuff, you know, the specifics a lot more, but as a teaching tool. So we'll have her do it
right. And
while we're explaining to her why we're doing it. That's why we chose to use the observational. We were able to go out with her, look for the moon one night, see it wasn't there, then show her where it was the next night. And so, you know, as we're explaining it to her, so that was my kind of view from using that this year. In the past, we used to actually use more of the astronomical, but with having her, it makes a great teaching tool. Yeah, it's not about doing it to do it, but it's a great way to explain and teach her.
And, you know, I want you to tell me, what is more important, than educating your daughter about something that will bring her closer to her Heavenly Father?
Nothing.
What could you do in your life that's better than that?
Nothing again.
Nothing.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And when you were doing it for her. My guess is it made you feel really good.
Oh, yeah.
Then you may have gotten more out of it than she did.
At this age, probably.
Yeah, probably. That's the way it's designed, by the way. That's the whole purpose behind it. So, you know, that's why I don't want to give anybody the date, because I think knowing the date is, it's not irrelevant, but it's on the 1 to 10 scale of importance, it's a 1.
Well, figuring it out and figuring out what you're going to do yourself is, you know, what's important, because that's you developing your relationship, not just doing what someone else told you to do.
Right.
You know, investing that time to research it and look into it and decide, okay, I'm going to choose this because of this, this, and this.
Yeah. You know, in 2 days, half the world is going to celebrate the dumbest, most offensive pagan holiday ever perpetrated on humankind. And they're going to do it thinking they're being religious, that they're doing something that pleases God. They're going to go to an Easter Sunday sunrise service.
I think today is probably the dumbest one. The idea that God can die.
Oh, yeah, Good Friday. And it's good that God dies.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you be so
God died, and that's
stupid?
A good thing.
How could you be so stupid? You know, they call it, Body Thursday. It was a Thursday. Thursday is irrelevant. So is Friday. So is Saturday. So is Sunday. The days of the week are irrelevant. It wasn't the Last Supper, you idiot. It was Passover. It's black and white. It's not hidden. And what happened on the Shabbat? It's the most important thing in the world, and there isn't a Christian on the planet that's ever conceived, ever considered matzah.
They ask you what it is.
They don't even know what it is.
I've had that several times. They're like, what's that? You know, it's one of the seven feasts of the Bible. There's seven?
There's seven?
Yeah, you carry that book around, you go to church every week, and you don't know that.
Yeah. Would you tell me what happens if you celebrate Pesach? And you do not observe matzah?
You'd be separated.
Hell.
Yeah, hell. That's what happens. Eternal hell is Pesach without matzah. That's really stupid. You know, think about Pesach. Why is Pesach about a lamb? Why is it about a lamb? What's the first letter in the title L? For Almighty God. What's the first letter in the title Ab for our Heavenly Father? What is that letter? I must be having a senior moment here. What is that letter? Oh, an Aleph. How is the Aleph drawn?
The ram's head.
Ram's head. And it's the first letter of the
ram. Is a ram a male lamb?
No, sir.
Yes, it is.
Okay. So the title God in Hebrew, El, Father, Ab. They're both two letters long. They both begin with a ram's head, which is a male lamb.
Mm-hmm.
And Pesach is about a male lamb?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is there a connection? Did I stumble on something here that is that the world has missed? Is there a connection here?
George, I think you've got it.
I think you got something there.
So who does the lamb represent?
Yahweh going to work.
Absolutely. Yahweh is using the lamb because he has chosen to be part of the flock. He's chosen to lead the flock. He's chosen to become one of us. That's why he's chosen the ram. And he's saying, I'm the one making that sacrifice. When Abraham, and we're studying the story of Abraham now, took Yishak up to Mount Moriah, and Yishak said, hey, Dad, where's the lamb? What did his dad say?
To be provided.
Yeah, well, we'll provide.
That's exactly what he said. So why is it that half the world's population doesn't pay any attention to that? That Yahweh is going to provide the lamb. Did Yahweh provide the lamb?
Yes, he did.
What was on Mount Moriah, which means, by the way, to revere Yah? What was there? Didn't we find a male lamb right there?
Yep.
Well,
trapped.
Why is it, since exactly 40 Yobel later, 2,000 years, on the same day, Pesach, why is it the world can't figure out that Yahusha was the lamb representing Pesach? Why can't the world figure out that he could eat Pesach dinner and celebrate Pesach with his disciples and become the Pesach lamb the next day? Because the day in Hebrew begins with sundown and continues until sunset the following day. How come they can't figure that out? How is it that they
because
don't
that's
understand
all part of that Old Testament that and Paul said that we don't need that. I mean, that's all that Old Testament. Paul said we don't need that anymore.
There's a fellow, let's see, there's a prophet that we've been studying here recently. A prophet with a really long scroll. Predicted a lot of things that pertain to future events. What's that prophet's name? That was Yahshua, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yahshua, yeah. Isaiah. What did Yahweh convey through Yahshua in the 53rd chapter of that book?
How it would happen.
Yeah, didn't he say that? That the lamb would accept the sins of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't he explain this whole
mm-hmm.
thing?
Right.
What is half the world illiterate?
How in the world can they say
that you're worshiping a God whose words you not only ignore but you reject? Can mm-hmm. you explain that to me?
The choice.
Well, he knows my heart.
You know, I had a person I was communicating with this the other day that said that they were a fan of his particular 1930s, 1920s, 1940s writer, and the whole presentation of this particular writer is that God loves everybody, and the degree that God loves you is the degree that you worship Him. Oh yeah.
Let that worship.
Excuse me. Now, if he is the Passover lamb, who is doing the work? Who's Jesus. Making the sacrifice? Who is lifting who up?
Yahweh.
Yeah. There is a zero possibility that Yahweh is going to choose Pesach as the means to eternal life and to serve as the Pesach lamb, if his choice is for mankind to worship him and serve him. Seems to me like it's the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense the other way around, because Yahweh as the Passover lamb can in fact make us immortal, can in fact lift us up. We, as the Passover lamb, are simply dead.
The only thing Yahweh asks of us is to leave our baggage at the door before entering his house, not to bring that religious rubbish in with us.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
He does everything else. That's the only thing we have to do.
Leave the garbage at the door. Leave the garbage even before
you outside the door.
At the door. Yeah. Absolutely. Ain't coming to my house. I don't want to spend any time around. You have to be an absolute moron to be a Christian. I mean, you do. You have to be a moron to not be able to put these pieces together. What it basically says is, I'm going to ignore everything God said because I know that what he said is completely incongruent with what I believe. And so the only way I can believe is to be ignorant and irrational. So that's what I'm going to do because, well, my belief is far more important.
It's just easier.
Than anything else. So Pesach is about Yahweh as the Passover lamb. Because Yahweh can make the sacrifice necessary for us to become immortal. But becoming immortal and being imperfect is counterproductive. That's an express ticket to Sheol. So, when you guys have your Pesach dinner tomorrow night, are you going to have a bunch of really leavened bread along with it?
Not at all.
Nope.
No.
Going to have some nice homemade matzah.
Right. I started 7 days of matzah this evening. Tell you that none of this is a sacrifice for me. I ain't giving squat here. I have lamb is my favorite meat, and I love it barbecued.
Oh, yeah.
And I season it with such that it is really yummy. And I just love it. And I eat matzah all year round. And my favorite way to eat matzah is to dip it in olive oil with herbs. So, Pesach takes on special meaning. I happen to love red wines. I had a wine from Yisrael tonight with my son. So all of it for me is just, okay, this is really cool.
Really
I could do this. I could do this forever and not change an iota. but nonetheless, we eat matzah on Pesach because the unleavening of our souls. Leaven is it's not unleavening, the unyeasting of our souls. Yeast is the thing that is called out. Yeast is a fungus. It permeates, and therefore, Yahweh is saying, and it, by the way, it intoxicates. It's yeast that creates the intoxicating nature, both of beer and wine.
Mm-hmm.
Yahweh is saying that I want to remove the intoxication, which is religion, politics. Those are the intoxicating things in our world. And I want to remove those from you. And so that you're perfect. And then you can be adopted into my family. And so we begin matzah on yeasted bread while we're taking advantage of the doorway to life via Pesach. And, of course, where was the lamb's blood smeared? Was it smeared
on the door?
On the floor? On the floor on the house?
On the post.
No. Was it smeared on the roof of the house? God's in heaven. And so, if you wanted him to see, wouldn't you smear the blood on the roof?
Not if he's over
at home. If you wanted everybody in the family to see, wouldn't you spread it on the walls of the house? No. Where did he ask for it to be spread?
The lintel on the doorpost.
Right. Yeah, the frame of the doorway, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because that's the way to
get doorway to eternal life. Understand that Pesach is a doorway. A doorway to what? To life. Life where? Because there's two ways to have eternal life.
Yeah, Shemayin with Yahweh.
Yeah.
What happens to me?
Doorway. It's the doorway to Yahweh's home. Pesach is the doorway to Yahweh's home. That's why it was just so amazing that when Yahweh told Yahshayah, walk through the doorway into Shamayim, into heaven, there is the spiritual realm. And the first time he's been there with Yahweh. And Yahweh took him to Shamayim, the spiritual realm, and he's now standing right before Yahweh. And Yahweh becomes despondent. And Yahshayah, Isaiah, becomes despondent. He says, oh my God, what have I done? Here, I've just begun my mission. You know, I'm just a few years into it. And I'm grieving God. And, you know, I can understand that because, listen, you know, I'm one billionth of what Yahshayah is, as are you fellas. And yet we know that our lives don't measure up. You know, we're delighted to be used in this way as dented and flawed implements. But, you know, you're brought in front of Yahweh and he's despondent. And you're going to say, yeah, you're you're right. I could have done a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really sorry. I should have done a lot better. Could have done a lot better. But that wasn't what Yahweh was despondent about. He's very clear. And he says, it's about the doorway. I opened the doorway to my home, and no one was there. He opened the doorway at Pesach. He is the Pesach lamb. He provided the means to his home. And he's saying that over the course of a couple of thousand years, no one took advantage of it. No one. That's why it's just so sad that people are religious, that they believe those buffoons that are, you know, I'm almost afraid to say misleading them. Because to be misled suggests that somehow the guidance isn't obvious, that somehow the path isn't clear, that somehow they had to be really devious to take them in the opposite direction. And, you know, I was once there. I was once amongst those not only misled, but who was misleading. But once you see how obvious it is that all of the what they're presenting is just a bunch of mumbo jumbo lies, and it's just pathetic, and none of it makes any sense. That's all wrong, and that God's guidance is so clear, it's really hard to be sympathetic to those who are going in the wrong direction. It's so clear, it's so obvious. And so here we are selling Pesach, we're selling matzah along with it, because both are essential, and that they lead to the greatest of all things, being adopted into God's family, becoming firstborn children. And that is what this day represents. It is Pesach Matzah Bukurim. I know it's celebrated over 3 days. It's actually celebrated over 7 days, but it's 3 days celebrated over seven. I don't think they're independent.
They're one unit.
They are one unit.
And there's actually I believe, in the prophets where they refer to it as, you know, one holiday, basically.
Yeah, once a week.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, I was reading in the chat room about someone asking a question. You know, do you remove all chemical leavening agents from your home? Now, I'm gonna answer what I do. And I've never claimed to be right. I'm just going to share my thinking on it. And you can, if you have a different thought, that's fine. I do not. Matzah does not mean unleavened. It means unyeasted.
Unyeasted.
There was no chemical leavening agents at the time. There was yeast. Yeast is a fungus. You cannot use a chemical leavening agent to make beer or wine, to ferment something to create alcohol. And we're dealing with bread here. Almost no one uses a chemical leavening agent to aerate bread. Yeast is used to make bread. Yeast is used to make wine. Yeast is used to make beer. Yeast makes these intoxicated beverages. Yeast is a fungus. God's not talking about a chemical leavening agent. Now, there are a lot of people that say, it's still called unleavened bread, and I don't want to take any chances. That's not my attitude on this. Huh? I'm going to go back to King Shaul. King Shaul didn't negate part of the Torah. What did he do? What did he do that caused Yahweh to be so angry with him?
He started adding to it.
That's it. He had his own rules that he added to it. That's what the rabbis do. They have their own rules that they add to it. Isn't
what did, you know, what did Chawa do when speaking with the serpent?
Yeah.
He added to what Chawa said. Yahweh said, don't eat it. She added to it.
Right. Don't touch it. It's, in my view, you can have a different view, and you could be right and I could be wrong. My view is, don't add to it. It's on yeast. The translation, I was guilty for a long time calling it unleavened. It's on yeasted bread. There was no leaven in the day.
Yeah.
Leavening agents, there was no leavening agent. It's yeast. And so I do not exclude baking powder. Just don't. I don't think it pertains. They might say, oh, you know, you're being way too lax about this whole thing. You know, maybe you're God mad. No. First of all, do I really think that God cares if I have a piece of sourdough toast tomorrow morning for breakfast? But I'm not going to. I'm not going to, because I happen to like the symbolism of these days,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not going to. But do you think that our relationship's going to be over because I just say, you know, tomorrow morning, a little sourdough toast with a little butter on it. Boy, that really sounds yummy.
Yeah.
I don't like sourdough.
I don't think there's any danger there.
I've had a few times where during matzah, I get to work. I haven't had my coffee. I'm kind of half dragging. I go into the teacher's lounge to do something, and they have a box of donuts. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to snag a donut. I get halfway through it and go, oh, no, dope. I don't think I don't subscribe to the idea of God sitting up there just looking for me to make a mistake to kick me out.
No. And, you know, the beauty of the whole thing is that almost all of his instructions are in the imperfect anyway. So if you set the donut down, even if the donut was an issue, no longer an issue the moment you set it down.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's a marvelous part of the whole thing. Now, we have been studying Yahweh's discussions with Abraham because they established the terms and conditions of the covenant and the benefits of the covenant. That's the only place that the terms and conditions of the covenant are delineated so matter-of-factly, so clearly, so comprehensively, within the context of that relationship, where Yahweh is saying over and over again, this is my covenant relationship. Over and over again. And I've come to view, Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, Shavua, and really even Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah as all the celebration of the covenant. I don't think they exist apart from the covenant. I don't think they have any purpose apart from the covenant. I don't think the covenant exists without them, the seven Moed Mikre. And I don't think the seven Moed Mikre exist without the covenant. I think they are essentially one and the same. I think they're integrated, and they exist for each other. So when we talk about the covenant, I think we're talking about the Mikre. When we talk about the Mikre, I think we're talking about the covenant. I see no distinction between them. You know, the whole purpose of the covenant is to leave the family of man, come to know Yahweh, come to benefit from what Yahweh is offering, walking to Him, becoming perfect, coming to trust and rely on Him, and observing the terms of the covenant relationship, and circumcising yourself from the rest of the world to become part of His family. That's the entire purpose of the covenant. The entire purpose of the Moed Mikre is to walk through the door of Yahweh's home for eternal life, for Yahweh to perfect us so that He can adopt us into His family. And as fathers are wont to do, He can enrich and empower us on Shavuah so that we can do the business of the Father, which is to share this message and invite others to participate and also provide a warning to the world on Teruah so that we all can be reconciled into God's family, and on Sukkah, camp out with Him for all eternity. How are those stories any different? Is there even a nuance of difference between those stories?
No.
I don't think so. So I think that if you don't understand the covenant, you have no chance of understanding the Mikre. If you don't understand the Mikre, you have no chance of understanding the covenant. If you don't celebrate the Mikre, you can't be part of the covenant. If you're not part of the covenant, you can't celebrate the Mikre. The Moed Mikre, Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, Shavuah, Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah, do a person zero good if they're not part of the covenant. If they're part of the covenant, they can't benefit from the covenant unless they celebrate those 7 days. They're coterminous. They're synonymous. You can't talk about the covenant without talking about the Moed Mikre. You can't talk about the Moed Mikre without understanding the covenant. It's all about Yahweh providing the means for us to become part of his family, to live with him forever, to disassociate from the corruption of man and to become part of his spiritual world. That's why it's just so unbelievably stunning that so many people have been led to believe that there was this fellow named Jesus Christ, not Yahusha, who celebrated a Last Supper, not Passover, that God himself died when the eyewitness testimony clearly says just the opposite, that the Spirit left him before he took his last breath. Right. So it's just the Passover lamb, the body of the Passover lamb is all that was left, and the soul went into Sheol to serve as the perfecting, unyeasting aspect of matzah, and that it is so obvious. Every nuance of the eyewitness accounts, plus all the testimony that Yahweh provided through his prophets, clearly say that on Bukurim, that was a spiritual rebirth, that the soul and the spirit were reunited and that a physical body became irrelevant. There was the physical body that became the Pesach lamb was long gone. It was destroyed on the night of Pesach. Didn't exist anymore. There was no bodily resurrection. It'd be counterproductive. And yet that 3.5 billion people believe that God actually died and that he was bodily resurrected on an Easter Sunday, having no concept of Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, having no concept of the name that he lived, having no concept of what the Pesach lamb represents, who it is, having no concept that all of this was done for the one and only original covenant that was established through Abraham.
Why do you suppose they left it in the creed that he went into
what
hell?
Part?
Well, the Nicene Creed says he died and then his soul went into hell. And nobody ever asked that question? I did,
yeah,
but
no one
nobody ever gave an answer.
It's true, his soul went into
hell. So obviously they just ignored more than...
Right.
Somebody should have said, well, wait a minute, time out, why do we do this?
Why did he do that?
Yeah.
I mean, it's obvious the prophets tell us.
Yeah.
Psalm 22, Psalm 88 are explicit. Isaiah 53 is explicit.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
he has
hidden.
To. He has to.
Right.
Somebody has to pay that price, too. It's not just death.
Right.
It's death of the...
Exactly. What do you think that in 2 Samuel 7, what do you think he's talking about when he says, when sin is associated with him, I'm not going to spare the discipline? What do you think he's talking about?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't God beating the crap out of him on Pesach. It was the Romans.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then the idiot Christians, particularly the Catholics, think that the Jews are the Jesus killers. How could you be so stupid?
Crucifixion
was a Roman form of execution. And that Imperial Rome and the Roman Catholic Church are coterminous. You did it. Roman Catholics, you did it. Live up to it. Own it. You were ignorant then, you're ignorant now. The whole thing is just so amazing to me. And of course, no one seems to understand what is the correlation between wine and blood if it isn't the blood of the Pesach lamb being smeared on the doorway to life as part of Pesach. How hard is that connection to make? Why do they have wine at communion and they can't make the connection? Why do they have a little flat wafers of bread and they can't make the connection to matzah? What is it with people? How can they be so stupid? I mean, you have to be a moron to be religious. It's just the fact that, okay, we're gonna have an Easter bunny laying eggs. Do bunnies lay eggs?
Not that I'm aware of.
None that I know of.
Where,
maybe the jackalope. What is the correlation between God and a bunny? Where does God speak of bunny?
Nothing.
Where does God speak of eggs?
Wait, isn't the bunny actually spoken of as one of the animals not to eat?
Yes. Could you also tell me where, when Yahweh is speaking of Astarte as the Queen of Heaven and the Mother of God, and he's condemning her, what was her most common name prior to the creation of Roman Catholicism?
Eve.
What was Astarte's most popular name prior to the formation of Roman Catholicism?
It was an Eve.
Ishtar.
Yeah.
What is Ishtar? Easter.
Mm-hmm.
The Roman Church named the pagan holiday after the pagan goddess, the Queen of Heaven and the Mother of God, went all the way back to Babylon. And part of the Roman religion, part of the Greek religion, part of the Egyptian religion, they didn't even change the name. And still you got an Easter Sunday celebrating Ishtar, the whore of Babylon, the incarnation of Satan himself, with a bunny that lays eggs. Oh, it's also harmless. No, it isn't. Putrid. It's revolting. It's disgusting. It's an abomination. Everyone who's going to celebrate Easter is separating themselves eternally from God. And deservedly so. And Kirk, you did a little bit of research.
Yeah.
How hard was it to find that there is no justification in Yahweh's testimony whatsoever for Easter, and there's wholesale condemnations of it, and that Easter is a Babylonian pagan holiday? How hard was that to figure out?
Oh, I've known it for years. There's thousands of books on it, plus you can, on the internet now, you can, 15 minutes now.
I knew that before I had any idea who Yahweh was.
Yeah.
Right.
I knew that as a Christian. I just thought everybody going nuts.
Yes. You're just nuts. And Christmas, you know, how many months is it from Easter Sunday to Christmas Day?
About nine.
Nine. And what is the gestation period of a human?
Nine
months.
Oh. So isn't the pagan story that the sun, which was God, impregnated Mother Earth and also the Queen of Heaven, Mother of God, on the Sunday closest to the vernal equinox, Easter Sunday, so that 9 months later, the Mother of God and the Queen of Heaven could deliver, as the Madonna and Child, the Son of God? Isn't that central to every pagan religion?
Absolutely.
So why in the hell?
That's how you sell it.
Do Christians celebrate these pagan abominations? When Yahweh spoke of the seventh day, and that's the day you should keep set apart, is the seventh day the first day of the week?
No.
Is the first day ever the seventh day of the week? Ever?
Never.
No. What day of the week is Sunday?
The first day of the week.
Yep.
According to Paul, that's when you can gather all your, supposed to bring all your stuff to the warehouse, his particular warehouse.
Well,
that's the way it
is. Yeah. It is absolutely pathetic. If you're a Christian, you're celebrating on Easter Sunday, you're celebrating Christmas, you are an idiot. You deserve to have your soul cease to exist. Good riddance. Don't want to see you in heaven. You're not coming to heaven. And if you're one of those promoting it, enjoy your fellow Christians in hell. Because that's where you're headed. And you deserve it. This is not hard. And yet, it's amazing that if you were to share this with any religious person, none of them will accept it. None of them will process it. You're the bad guy. I want to cling to my belief. I want to continue to believe the Roman Catholic Church. What a stupid fool. It's just disgusting. You're disgusting. you're a Christian celebrating Easter. Now, and just think about a Sunday worship service. Now, we've talked about
sunrise service.
Yeah, well, yeah, sunrise service. Now we're back to the sun god. And Sunday, of course, is the day to honor the sun, because that's what all pagans do. And, of course, you know, the pagan and Christian gods all have halos, which is a symbol of the sun, and they're chompers throughout the religious symbols. And, of course, Easter Sunday and Christmas are sun holidays. It's called the vernal equinox and the winter solstice. All pagan, all sun-related. You haven't gone beyond the pagan religions of yesteryear. But, you know, as I drive by buildings and they're going to have Sunday worship services, if you've got half a brain, how hard is it to realize that a God that would create a being to worship him isn't worth knowing? Not only isn't he worth worshiping, he ain't even worth knowing. I mean, that's just a revolting, demeaning concept, that God would create an inferior being to worship him. That makes man at the level, or makes God at the level of perverted man. Yeah, men like to be worshipped.
Yeah.
But that's basically what's happening there. It's taking, making God in the image of the most perverted and twisted men to think that he wants to be worshipped. Now, we've talked about this before, and yet it continues to go on. JB, you're a pretty fit guy. Yeah, how are you going to be? How are you at lifting God up?
Not very good.
No.
My daughter.
And let's just, say that you could elevate him a millimeter.
Quarter of an inch.
Yeah. See if you could do that. What good would it do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No good.
Can Yahweh lift you up, JB?
Oh, yeah. Easily.
Would he enjoy doing so?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
As he promised
you. Not like I do when I pick my daughter up.
Right. Good thing, right? They just have it backwards. Everything is backwards. This is one of the few years, though, by the way, that Pesach, what Yahweh has, is offering us as the doorway to life, and Matzah, the means to perfection, to remove the fungus of religion and politics from our souls so that we are acceptable to Yahweh and therefore can be adopted into his family. This is one of the few times where they're going to overlap. In fact, if you're like me and you're celebrating this year Pesach on tonight, guess what? Bukurim and Easter Sunday overlap. Doesn't happen very often. That doesn't happen very often. The truth is being covered up by the religious lie. That's why God hates religion so much. If religion had taken its own course and just said, okay, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to present salamanders and chameleons as divine representatives, and you're going to come to celebrate your relationship with them by bubbling up slime, and you're going to do so on a schedule that has absolutely nothing to do with God. Yeah. Okay. Propose your plan. See how many people you can fool. You know, be like Scientology. And I have the extraterrestrials in the volcano and sucking in souls. Go ahead and see how many people you can snooker that way. But don't play off the truth. Don't cover up the truth. Don't do what Mormons do. Don't do what Roman Catholics do. Don't do what Protestant Christians do. Don't even do what rabbinical Jews do. And pile your lies on top of the truth so as to hide the truth with your lies. Because that's the thing that really upsets God. Nothing
bothers Yahweh one more.
So those are my thoughts on PSOC. Do you guys have any more before we return to the story of the covenant?
No.
I think that kind of covers it.
Yeah. I did one thing this week, though, that we might do sometime in the near future or whatever. I took the I was studying the 17:9 where we'd left, where we were supposed to begin. We had covered off before that. And you wrote, "My family covenant relationship, continually examine, carefully consider, genuinely consider." And then in the second paragraph, the start of 17:10, it says the same thing again. And I started going through all the different words that were related to observe. And then, so I went through that, and that's kind of fun. But then I took another piece of paper, and I said, okay, let's take a look at Shemar Torah, which was what we're asked to do. And I was doing it in verses, keep my commandments.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked all these things up in the lexicons, but I also looked them all up in the English dictionaries.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing. How they've twisted it. It's amazing how, and even in the dictionaries, if you were to read the dictionaries, like I have a large, Terry has this large Webster's Encyclopedia Dictionary. And if you read everything it says, they have to fight real hard to get keep in there as a meaning. And they give you tons of room, leeway, to come back to Shemar, which is to observe. It just went on and on and on and on. It's, so I thought, you know, you just have to lie to do this. I mean,
yeah.
I can prove it to you, but I mean, it's just amazingly, you know, even using keep as a translation for Shemar, it's said 219 times, and 200 times they change it to law, and it just ain't there. It just ain't there. It's a secondary thing, and then you go to keep, and keep is mostly about observing.
Yeah, I have no idea how they get keep out of Shemar.
Well, I'll give you a couple just for food for thought, just in case you think if
everybody
out there is thinking that they need to keep these
keep
rules. And do them specifically. I mean, we're going to do as many as we can correctly, just because.
Yeah. By the way, they mean keep. They use keep as to obey. They look use keep as synonymous with obey.
Mm-hmm. And it has to be keep with in conjunction with keeping my commandments to reinforce
right.
it. Because if you look up keep the Anglo-Saxon word is they say keep, observe, and regard to watch over.
And by the way, keep has observe and watch over and regard. That is a valid definition of Shemar. You know, it's to keep your eyes open, to keep focus,
to
keep observing.
Regard information highly.
Right.
To protect it, keep it alive.
So the original definition of keep was just fine. It's just that that's not what keep means now when people read it in their English Bibles. And just to use the word keep, because that's not what people read, mm-hmm. is a hugely misleading concept, because the Shemar, the best single word to translate mm-hmm. Shemar is to observe.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to choose a series of words, because sometimes people look, I'm Torah observant, they will think, well, you're Torah obedient. No.
Mm-hmm.
To observe is to closely examine and carefully consider. That's what observe means.
But here's some more fodder for you, if you like. It's mm-hmm. to remain in a position or a state, it means to continue. It means to keep at it, to persevere. That's Sarah. You know, that's good.
Right. That's right.
Remaining words, sorry.
Yeah, that's right. There,
I mean,
to endure and to persevere, to keep at it.
Yes.
You know, and even, and I kind of like this, you know, Sarah also means to wrestle with, to struggle with.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
There are times when I've struggled with Yahweh.
Sure.
I don't know about you guys, but there's times I've struggled with him. There,
there
are times when I say, you know, I don't get that. I don't know why you use this term. I don't know why you made it this way. You know, it's not what I would have chosen. And I will struggle with it. And he didn't have a problem with that, by the way.
Well, I had that experience last night. before I got to this part, and I'll share that with you in a second if you want. But
yeah,
back to keep is to remain in one's power and or possession. These are some of the negative things. Not to lose or to part with, which ain't bad. To preserve,
right.
Persevere. I mean, to preserve. It also means a course of action, to continue, to maintain, and to keep in step, to walk in the path of the Moed Mikras.
Wow.
So if I was just looking at keep, I said, you know, I'm going to have a hard time twisting that around to the way they're using it until
right.
I get to the next word, which, of course, is command.
Right.
And that's an order given by an authority. It's a Latin word. It's not an Anglo-Saxon word. It comes from the French through the Latin. And it means to commit to an order with authority, to lay an injunction, to exercise supreme authority, especially military, to have control over, to compel, to exercise influence and power over others. It's a mandate. It is a control factor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you put keep with that, nobody misses the point that they want to give you. Whereas
yeah,
if
it's
you
so amazing to me, Kirk, that in this regard, that most people have been, throughout time, not just
mm-hmm.
today, but throughout time, have been led to believe that their military provides their freedom and that their military is providing a service when nothing could be further from the truth.
No,
the military
is the
antithesis of a source of freedom. It is the antithesis of a service. In fact, in the military, it's a command and control regimen where there is no freedom. It is the least free institution in any society. So it's the militarism and patriotism around militarism is as big a lie and a big part of the problem for people in their inability to distance themselves from the family of man and to choose the family of God, the covenant, as is religion. I think they are equally sinister, equally wrong,
mm-hmm.
equally debilitating. I think that, Kirk, that which I think your point is here,
mm-hmm.
that the two words that Yahweh uses the most to instruct us what is in our interest,
yes.
they are Shama and Shamar.
Mm-hmm.
One is to use your eyes to observe, which is
mm-hmm.
to closely examine, and the other is use your ears to listen. There isn't a single time that Yahweh says, use your mouth to blabber. There's not a single time he says, you know, get on your knees and pray. Not once. And yet it's hundreds of times that he uses Shamar, observe, closely examine, use your eyes to see what I have conveyed, use your ears to listen to what I have to say, and never once tells us to open our mouths and blabber to him.
Like you said it before, you know, God gave us two eyes, two ears, and one mouth. Take it clean.
Right. Yeah. You know, I think I was blessed with a decent mind. You know, I'm not in dote category by any stretch, but you know, my noggin is probably worked at a slightly faster pace than the average noggin. And you know, I think that by using my noggin and examining how it's justified, I figured out some things that are really really profound, really interesting. But I'm here to tell you that when it comes to a dialogue with Yahweh, I'm a lot better off listening to him than I am talking to him.
there
isn't a single thing that I can tell him that he doesn't know. And there is an infinite number of things he can tell me that I don't know. There is nothing I can tell Yahweh that he will benefit from. There's a innumerable things that Yahweh can tell me that I will benefit from. If I listen to him, we both benefit. If he listens to me, neither of us benefit. I mean, it's not hard. You know, I've studied this now for more than 15 years. Amongst the family, I'll share and talk. But it's between Yahweh and me, I'm all about listening.
Mm-hmm.
Not about talking. You know, like the Pope, I'm not going to go pray about it. I'm not going to ask anybody else to pray about it. I'm not going to pray about it. I'm going to listen.
Mm-hmm. Where are you going to listen to? You're going to listen to the Torah.
I want to listen to the Torah. I want to listen to what I was teaching. Right.
No.
Yeah, somebody asked me the other day, what authors do you like? There's only one that I like.
I like Yahweh.
Yeah, that's good enough for me. People say, Moses had a lot to say. You're like him. It's true that Moshe did have a lot to say. The Devarim is Moshe summarizing and trying to explain what Yahweh said. But other than that, Moshe is a conduit.
He's a scribe.
All the books that I've written, I'm nothing but a conduit. This is what Yahweh said. Let's translate what he said, and then let's try to understand what he said. You're just a conduit. No, that's not to demean Moshe. Being a conduit on behalf of Yahweh, that's a cool job. That's a cool job. The benefits are forever. But still, that's what it's all about. So, with that all said, we have about 20 minutes or so left. Let's just revisit Bavrishi 17:7, and then we'll move on from there.
Someone emailed about this earlier this week. They were wondering what chapter are we in observations, and I couldn't remember off the top of my head, so I told them I'd have sure I'd have you tell everyone before we got into it this week. So
yeah, we're in Kirk's favorite chapter of the book. Is that fair to say, Kirk?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, my favorite too. In fact, I would say 10 is my favorite chapter of all of the books.
Mm-hmm.
You take all the books collectively, 10 is my favorite chapter of all the books. I think if you were just saying read one thing, I just read chapter 10 of Observations for Our Time, and that's where essentially everything you need to know is presented right there. So it's my favorite chapter of all of the books. We're on page 79 of 100 of chapter 10. And by the way, chapter 11 is also really, really, really good with babies. But chapter 11 is not all that strong without chapter 10. You don't need anything to appreciate 10. You need 10 to appreciate 11. 11 is the test. You know, it's an open book test, but you're tested on your understanding commitment to the covenant. By the way, I'm really glad that Yahweh has a test. And the reason I'm really glad is, we went through a period of time where we had two groups of people that really went south. I mean, they went way wacko conspiracy theory. But they could parrot, I'm covenant. They could parrot Yahweh's name. They could say Pesach and Matzah. They could use the vocabulary. They didn't have any understanding of it. If Yahweh didn't have a test and all you had to do is parrot this stuff, then eternal life would be corrupted with a lot of really whacked out people. So I'm actually very glad there's a test. The test is open book. Abraham passed the test. He was not the sharpest tool in the shed. So long as we seek to understand these things as opposed to simply parrot them, we will all pass the test. So 11 is about the test. So it is a really fun chapter as well. All right, so here is Bavrishit in the beginning, Genesis 17:7. We covered this briefly at the end of our program last week. And who is the speaker here? Kirk, you know who's talking?
Yeah, I'm gonna take a stand, establish as.
Yeah, who's that? Who's speaking here? Who's I? Oh, yeah. And he happens to be?
The God of the universe, the Creator,
the one and only God, creator of the universe. Yeah, that's the guy.
One we should really pay attention to.
If you're going to choose to listen to somebody, and your choice is the Pope, a minister, the president, a general,
or a bit of ground tape,
judge, or
me. Don't listen to me. Listen to him.
Or you and me. Who do you think is more credible?
I think Yahweh's got your hands down.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the, I'm going to go with this guy, Yahweh. And I, not Jesus, not Muhammad, not Allah, not the President of the United States, not a military, and I, personally, this is Yahweh speaking, I will take a stand to establish, confirm, and raise, therefore, my covenant family. Well, just right there, riveting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stop the presses. It's Yahweh, the God that Christians want to relegate to the Old Testament because he no longer matters. They don't like him anymore. They want it to be their Jeebus, except they don't pay any attention to what Jeebus actually said or actually did. I will take a stand. Yeah. Did Jeebus exist at this point?
No.
No. This is Yahweh. I will take the stand to establish, confirm, and raise. Oh, did he say the old covenant? Is there a word? Am I missing the old here?
Pingulamai.
Oh, you know, Paul called it the enslaving covenant because it was with Hagar. Is Yahweh saying this is a covenant with Hagar?
No.
Did he say this is the first covenant and there's going to be another one? Did he say the first of two covenants?
Nope.
What did he say?
He said my one and only, actually.
Yes, the one and only. Oh,
singular. Singular.
Hi, Annie. Annie is I know, Jamie, one of your favorite terms, A-N-Y, means I or my, it's first person. Pauline Christians would tell you that the old covenant was with the Jews. It was the Jewish thing, and God's really mad at them. So that's why he replaced it with the New Testament and the New Covenant. Whose is this covenant?
Yahweh's.
Yeah, he's speaking in first person. He's calling it my family, my covenant. So do you think, how do you justify that being the Jewish covenant? If Yahweh's speaking in first person, by the way, at the time Yahweh was calling it my covenant, were there any Jews at the time that Yahweh was calling it my covenant?
Not at all. Not one.
Nope.
Not one on the planet.
That would be descendants of Yehuda. Well, Yehuda was a son of Yisrael, who was a son of Jacob, who was a son of Abraham. So we're
a son of Abraham.
Five generations.
Son of Abraham.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, sorry, folks.
Five generations away here.
Yeah,
there are
sorry.
No Jews at this point.
That is correct. Not even close. Wake up. And I will take a stand to establish, confirm, and raise, therefore, my covenant family. Now, okay, so that means Christianity with its new covenant is toast. Gone. Can't exist. No room for it. That means there can be no Quran and Islam. It's all over. That means that God cannot be the Lord and cannot be worshipped. Because he is establishing a family. There are no lords, and there's no worshiping in a family. All of it goes away. Religion, worship, the concept of the Lord being God, Christianity and Islam are all destroyed just with wa kum eth bereth. All done. If you're aware of what God said, and you're a rational person, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, the concept of God being a Lord and of worship, of religion, are completely done away. Just with that simple statement. Now, God goes a little further, though. And I will take a stand to establish and confirm, therefore, my covenant family for the purpose of understanding by making connections between me and you to promote an association with your offspring after you, for their generations to approach by way of an everlasting family covenant relationship, to approach and exist your God and also for your offspring to approach after you. I have said this many times, and I'm going to say it again right now. And my top 10 Hebrew words is B-N. B-Y-N. Used twice here in this sentence. In fact, it's used twice just at this point in the sentence. What is the primary definition of B-N? The root of B-N. Well, as a verb, it means to understand. That is correct. As a verb, it means to understand. This is one of the few words that whose root is actually a preposition. B-Y-N means between. Mm-hmm. To connect things. Mm-hmm. So, B-N as a verb means the process of understanding that is developed through making connections.
So without Shamar, you can't do that. You have to put
without Shamar, you don't know where the dots are.
That's right.
Okay? Without BN, you're not connecting them.
Mm-hmm.
It's essential if you're going to understand who Yahweh is and what he is offering and asking in return and how you ought to respond to capitalize on what he is proposing. You have to understand, and the only way to understand is first to know through observation and then to make the connections through BN. This is the process that defines the path to be part of the covenant. BN is the path to the covenant. And God's not saying, I want you to understand the molecular weight of navel length. You know, he's not saying that I want you to understand how to cure cancer. No. What he's saying is, I want you to understand that the connections between me and you, so as to promote an association between me and you. That's what he wants us to understand. Well, how do you make those connections? Well, I'm here to tell you, the single biggest connection you can make is the connection between the covenant and the invitations to meet with God, the Mikra. Understand that connection. Understand why Yahweh chose the ram's head for his two favorite titles, God and Father. Understand the connection between the ram's head and Pesach, the doorway to his home. Understand that, and the connection between what happened on Mount Moriah with Abraham and then what happened 40 Obel later with Yosha on that same mountain, also on Pesach. By making those connections that you understand, and it's only when you understand these connections between God and us and why God is doing, you know, it's one thing to understand what that Passover is the doorway to life. It's another thing to understand that the doorway to life connects God to us and us to God. That's the connection you need to make to capitalize on it. There's so many people that think that that salvation is a result either of a profession of faith or of being good, that you're going to go to heaven because you're a good person. I've done more good in my life than bad. No. Now, you know, people would say, you know, you can believe in Passover, I'm going to believe in Easter. It doesn't matter what I believe. It doesn't matter what you believe. All that matters is what's right and what's wrong. But you can't know what's right and wrong if you are not observant and thoughtful making these connections. That is how you go about right and wrong. And being correct with God, and therefore part of his family, or estranged from him. And you can't differentiate between right and wrong, good and bad, life and death, man or Yahweh, without going through this very process. And that's what God is saying here. You want to know the path to God's family? You want to know the path to heaven? That path is paved with understanding. Every stepping stone along that path is comprised of understanding. You get right down to it. Pesach is not about doing. It's not what you do and when you do it or how you do it. It's you understand the connection between Pesach and Yahweh. Between that doorway his home in us. That is what being conveyed here. There is more insight and understanding in these statements than every Christian in the history of the world and every Christian scholar collectively has ascertained. You know, when somebody this week asked me, you know, what I thought about this particular author, everything I read about him, he said, oh, if you could only love enough, you'd be the most powerful person in the world. Nonsense. So, people project on God what they want God to be, but there's no correlation between who God actually is and what he said and what they write. Huh. Now, what God says of himself and what he is offering is crystal clear. But the truth is in the words. And if you don't take the time to examine the words, you will not know the truth. And if you don't know the truth, if you don't have quality information, then it doesn't matter how well you connect the dots. You aren't going to understand. You can know everything that's known to Christians and connect all of it together, and you're still nowhere. You're estranged from God.
Mm-hmm.
The things that you need to make the connections are in Yahweh's testimony. Understand what he said. Understand the words that he used. Understand the concept that he's conveying and the context that he's conveying it. That's what matters. So I will take a stand to establish and confirm, therefore, my covenant family for the purpose of understanding by making connections between me and you and to promote an association with your offspring. Now, this wasn't done for just Abraham. It wasn't done just for Sarah. It wasn't done just for Yishak. It wasn't done just for Jacob. It wasn't done just for the Jacob's 12 children, 13 really, when you count the Loi.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't done just for Yaudam and Yisrael. The offspring of the covenant, he has all of us. All of us who come to God over the pathway of understanding. And that's the only way to approach him. And understanding takes work. You know, it's not something that you're going to find.
And you never stop.
No, it's correct. It takes work. The most fun work you could possibly do, the most rewarding work you could possibly do, but it never stops.
It's a life change.
Yeah. Your offspring after you. Now, I'm here to tell you, there is only one reason that this testimony and this discussion between Yahweh and Abraham is recorded for us. Because it didn't do Abraham any good. I didn't even do Yishak any good because it wasn't available to Yishak. Mm-hmm. It didn't do Jacob any good. It wasn't available to Jacob. This testimony wasn't available for another 500 years. So, who's the testimony for?
Everybody else.
Everyone who can read.
For your offspring after you, for their generations to approach? How about, for everybody that came after him?
Mm-hmm.
For us. That's why
there's everyone with eyes to read.
Correct. Everyone with eyes to read and ears to hear. By way of a family that's going to exist until Paul comes along and changes everything. Until Jebus. Until Muhammad.
This was a great plan for a while.
For a while. But, it says Olam. Is there any definition of Olam other than forever?
Ever?
Everlasting?
Nope.
Into eternity, perpetual. So how could you have an old covenant be replaced with a new covenant if the one and only covenant is everlasting?
It's eternal.
Correct. So where is there room for Christianity?
There isn't.
So when the two eyewitnesses, Yaokanan and Matanyah, say that they heard Yosha say, this is the blood to establish the covenant. And then Lucas, who's the Roman, who is Paul's publicist and attaché, says, this is the new covenant.
He wasn't there.
Do we have absolute? And he wasn't there.
It's hearsay.
Hearsay testimony. Who is telling the truth? They're in conflict. They can't both be right.
I'm going to go with the two guys that were there, that their statement actually confirms what Yahweh said.
Yeah. And that's the bottom line. Yes, the two guys that were actually there, their testimony confirms what Yahweh said. And the two that were there, their testimony is credible and would be admissible in a court. And the one who wasn't there and reporting hearsay is not credible, and he was not there, and he's the lone man out. But really, what matters? The only thing that matters is the testimony.
Yahweh said.
If by chance Bandinya and Yao Kanan got it wrong, and Lucas got it right, if he said,
I'm going to go with the one that you guys said,
the only one that matters is the one that's consistent with Yahweh. That's all that matters. It can't be the renewed covenant because God said this covenant is eternal. And they might say, in Jeremiah 31, he talks about the new covenant. And it's different than the previous one. Oh, come on, idiot. Read what it says.
Stop reading snippets out of context.
Right, it says Kodesh. Kodesh doesn't mean new. It means renewed. Who is he renewing?
And who is it with?
A Gentile church or with Yisrael and Yahudah? Yisrael and Yahudah, not with some Roman church. You're screwed. And what is the one difference? I mean, there's only one difference between...
He's going to write the Torah on your heart.
That is correct.
So you can't dismiss the Torah with your renewed covenant because
it's
literally on your heart as part of the renewed covenant.
That is the only form of renewal. So for you to cite that...
So there's three strikes.
That you're right, you have to be ignorant and irrational. There's no excuse for ignorant and irrational. Really isn't. That's clear. Don't be so damn lazy. Think it through.
And today's day and age, there is no excuse for ignorance.
There isn't. Okay, for your generations to approach by way of an everlasting family covenant relationship, to approach and exist as Lahaya, your God. And also for your offspring to approach after you. Now, the only way you can have Yahweh, your God, is through the covenant. The one and only everlasting covenant. The only way to approach God. He has just said it there. There's one way to approach God. You want to approach God? It ain't through Easter. It ain't through Sunday. It isn't through a church. It isn't through Christmas. It isn't through a Trinity. It isn't through a prayer. It's not through an evangelist. Not through a church. Only one. By being... There's only one way to approach God, and it's through the everlasting covenant relationship as it was offered through Yahweh to Abraham and to the generations thereafter through the process of understanding. It is the only way to approach God. He's said right here, this is the way for all generations forever to approach me. It's just one verse. Bar Rishit, in the beginning, 17:7.
And you know, I think a lot of religious people would not be religious if they studied their Bible beginning to end rather than bits and pieces here and there and developing, being told what to think before actually reading it themselves.
Right.
Because if you read that, there's no way you could then read Paul saying, to dismiss all this and accept it. If you had read this, you'd be like, wait. What he's saying here is contradicting what I read here. But that's the thing. Most Christians, especially when you're raised in it, you're never given a Bible to read. Not until you're way older and you've already been indoctrinated with all of these things. And so then you're usually reading it bits and pieces, snippets here out of context that reinforce what you've already been told.
Correct.
You can't start a Bible at the end.
We all know that the English translations of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms are abysmal.
Mm-hmm.
They suck. They replace Yahweh's name with the Lord, which gives you the leads you in the absolute wrong direction. And they don't they replace set apart, which is a very profound term, with holy. And they replace mikre, which are invitations to be called out and meet, with holy convocations. They do everything. They replace Torah, which means teaching and guidance, with law. They do everything they can possibly do to mislead. They replace observe with keep. They replace listen with obey. And so it clearly, with all the names that they've changed, with all the terms that they've misrepresented, yeah, it's tough. But you're right. If you read the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, you will reject Christianity. There's no room for Christianity in it. If you're,
I had that conversation with someone once. I'm like, literally, if I were to go find a tribe that, you know, they speak English, but they've been cut off from the whole world. They have no idea about Christianity or any of this. And I gave them a King James Bible and came back 10 years later, they would not be celebrating Christianity. You cannot get Christianity even from a King James Bible.
That is correct. Impossible. Absolutely true. You cannot get Christianity from a King James Bible, as bad as it is.
You aren't going to find, you may not find the truth, but you're not going to get Christianity out of it.
Yeah. Now, fellas, you know one of the nice things about Pesach, Matzah, and Bikkurim is you're going to start celebrating Pesach, Matzah, and Bikkurim tomorrow, but guess what I'm going to be celebrating tomorrow? Pesach, Matzah, and Bikkurim.
Yeah.
Matzah,
yeah.
Which is pretty part of the same celebration. So I'm going to be celebrating it along with you, even though I started a day before you did. By the way, I actually started before sundown. You know, we're now at daylight savings time. The sun had set in Yisrael, which is really all that really matters. I did because I had my granddaughter over. And you know, we're going to eat at 5:30 with my granddaughter over. That's just, you know, her time. It's the right thing for her. I'm not. And if I waited to sundown, I wouldn't do the show. So, you know, Yahweh created Pesach so that he could celebrate the Passover meal with his disciples and show us the proper example, and then he served as the Pesach lamb. So, you know, I think Yahweh was just fine with the fact that I did it with my family, and I did it in a way so that I could celebrate Pesach with my family and still join you all for this program tonight. So that just shows you again that I'm not into obeying. I'm not into keeping. I'm into observing and listening and making the connections to understand and then grateful for it and capitalizing upon it. And I would encourage everybody to do the same.
There you go.
Yeah, across the board. Well, fellas, happy Pesach. Happy Matzah. Happy
Enjoy. Bechor,
happy Covenant. Because really this is a celebration of God opening the door to his home to invite his children inside as he makes them immortal and perfects them and adopts them into his family. That is what is happening on these 3 days.
Fantastic.
Yep.
You're here.
Good night. Yeah, good night.
Thank you, guys.
Talk to you next week.
All right. Yep.
Bye.
Good night.